نحمده ونصلي على رسوله الكريم. Surah Nisa, the fourth surah of the Quran, is divided into two components if you look at it from the point of view of the meanings and the message of the surah. The first component is comprised of the first 43 verses, and the next part of the surah is a relatively longer one, which begins with the 44th verse and goes on till the last verse, which is the 176th verse. This passage can also be subdivided into a number of paragraphs if you look at it from the point of view of the meanings. As I've mentioned in my previous presentation of Surah Nisa, that the surah describes in its first passage the law that the Almighty gave to the Muslim Ummah, more importantly, the law that had to do with the rights of the people who were weak and the downtrodden. In this particular part of the surah, the Almighty talks about all those problems and conspiracies that the Muslims had to face as a consequence of the Almighty's Sharia and the law getting introduced in the Muslim society. There were hypocrites, there were Jews who were at the back of the hypocrites, and there were other enemies of the Muslims who were all together trying to undermine the process of the implementation of Islamic law. So that when we look at the verses 44 to 57, what we find is that the Almighty is condemning the attitude of the Jews who were conspiring against the Muslims and the Islamic law. In particular, the Almighty mentions that these Jews were jealous of the fact that they were deprived of the privilege of being the only people who were picked by the Almighty for guiding the entire mankind. Now that the Muslim Ummah has emerged as the chosen people of the Almighty, this is something which the Jews have not been able to accept and digest. God Almighty mentions that if God's law is not properly accepted by a group of people, and there is some other law that they still continue to follow knowingly that it's not from God, then it is something that can be very close to polytheism or shirk. And polytheism is something which the Almighty would never forgive. And these Jews, in order to defend themselves and prove themselves right, they used to claim that they have as if been cleansed. They cannot be contaminated and polluted from inside. The Almighty says that such claims are baseless, because it is only through the process of proper behavior in this worldly life that an individual or a nation can be cleansed. The Almighty warns these people who were intentionally conspiring against God's law, that if they're not going to improve their behavior, then ultimately they may find themselves being punished in the hellfire. And it is only the good people who will enter the paradise and would live there forever. The next passage, verses 58 to 70, talks about the great Sharia, the law that was given to the Muslims to not only understand and follow, but to also implement on other people. The Almighty describes that it's a great trust which the Muslims have to shoulder, and they have to do it in the right manner. They'll have to be absolutely fair in dealing with the people. This is the first and the most important principle of the Islamic Sharia. And in order for this Sharia to be followed properly, the Muslims will have to be obedient to their authorities, to the political leadership. Muslims are not a group of people who are disunited and who behave chaotically. They are people who, despite having differences with their leadership, with their political leaders, they still resolve to follow them in matters where there is no disagreement. The Almighty mentions that there were some people during those times who, although had joined the ranks of the Muslims, and yet they were not very clear about where their loyalties really lied. And the Almighty clarifies that even though they are apparently Muslims, they are not particularly clear as to which of the two groups do they belong to. They ought to know that if they want to be real Muslims, they will have to follow the messenger under all circumstances, because it is the messenger of God, may Allah's mercy be on him, who is the sole representative of God's will in this world. Verses 71 to 85 again describe the hypocrites and the fact that they were hesitant to participate in jihad. Jihad became necessary during that period because there were many Muslims who wanted to migrate from Mecca or the surroundings to Medina, the Muslim state, and yet they were being prevented and stopped by many disbelievers. And it became necessary for the Muslims to come to the rescue of fellow Muslims and engage in a battle against the disbelievers. Now, the Muslims who were truly believing Muslims, who were devoted to the cause of Islam, had no problems in participating in jihad. It was something that they wanted to get involved in because it was through this struggle that they would be able to prove their loyalties and their true devotion to the Almighty. However, the hypocrites did not have the same spirit, and therefore they were always hesitant and dithering in the matter of jihad. The hypocrites have been informed in this particular passage that they have to be very clear with regard to where their loyalties lied, and they are expected by the Almighty to unconditionally surrender before His will. The Almighty's law, His message, is absolutely consistent, and it is one of the proofs of the fact that the Book of God is indeed from Him, that it is completely consistent and there aren't any inconsistencies, conflicts and contradictions in the message of God. And He would like His followers, believers, to likewise behave consistently and not be inconsistent the way the hypocrites were behaving. Thereafter, we have verses 86 to 100, wherein Muslims have been advised not to cut off their relationship with the hypocrites, despite the fact that the hypocrites in some ways were exposed. But the Almighty mentioned that it was not yet the occasion for them to be exposed completely before the Muslim society. It is the Almighty's law, it's his policy, that when He decides an individual or a group of people to be taken to task and to be punished, He doesn't do it immediately in only one step or go. He allows the individual and the group of people to improve and reform themselves if there is a possibility of a reform in them. So that the Muslims have been asked not to deal with such people who were showing hypocritical behavior, not to deal with them in a very harsh and strong manner, and let them get the opportunity of improving and correcting themselves. The Muslims in this passage, all Muslims have been advised to migrate towards Medina. All able-bodied Muslims were given this very clear instruction that if they were really true to their faith, if their claim was correct, then there is only one course of action for them, that they should migrate to Medina. Because living in Mecca or the surroundings where it was all disbelievers who were dominating the scene, it would never be possible for the Muslims to follow their religion and faith properly. And it was also the Almighty's ultimate plan that once the Muslims are all together, gathered in Medina, it would then that the Almighty would ultimately decide that His divine punishment would be inflicted upon those people who rejected the messenger's message coming from God without any reason and justification. So that the Muslims were expected to fight all those enemies of the fellow Muslims who were causing the believers not to migrate. Verses 101 to 104 are describing the process of shortening prayers during the time of jihad and the expeditions that the Muslims were undertaking during those times. It shows that no matter whatever be the occasion, a Muslim is always expected and required to remember Allah formally through formal prayers, as-salat. And even when they are in the battlefield, the Muslims were required that they pray to the Almighty, even though in this particular case, the prayer was allowed to be shortened. The prayer which is known as Qasr prayer has been mentioned in this particular passage. What is also very significant is the fact that there is another unique prayer that has been suggested in this passage, which requires the believers to pray behind the Prophet, may Allah's mercy be on him, in a way that not everybody prays together, but half of the Muslims were required to stand by and defend and make sure that the Muslims remain secure while they are praying and are not attacked by the enemy. And when those Muslims who were praying, they are spared from prayers, they were asked to take positions so as to allow their other brothers to get the privilege of praying behind the Prophet. Indeed, this occasion, this situation arose because everybody wanted to pray behind the Messenger, even when they were journeying and on the battlefield. Verses 105 to 115 are requiring the believers to be firm against the hypocrites. In other words, there was a long period of time that had passed, and the Almighty had now decided that the hypocrites, despite the fact that they were provided with the opportunity to improve their behavior, many of them did not avail that opportunity, and therefore they did not deserve the kind of relaxation and sympathy that they enjoyed earlier. And now was the time that the Muslims were asked to be firm with regard to the hypocrites. And this was also because of the fact that these hypocrites had actually started practically conspiring against the Muslims and making attempts to somehow sabotage the process of the implementation of Islamic law and Sharia. And these hypocrites have been warned of very serious consequences if their nefarious activities would continue. Verses 116 to 126 talk about a very strong condemnation of polytheism and shirk. The Almighty says that if somebody wants to make a god, a deity, other than God, or the real Lord, the Creator, this is what is polytheism and shirk, ascribing partners to him. This can be in the form of somebody attributing to someone else other than God attributes which only God can possess, worshipping somebody other than God, having desires and ambitions which go far beyond the acceptable limits of the Almighty, can at times also lead one to doing something which is very similar to shirk and polytheism. So the Almighty is warning the hypocrites as well as the people of the book to make sure that they do not indulge in activities which would amount to them doing shirk and therefore becoming eligible for the severest of the punishments from the Almighty. The Almighty tells them that it is Satan who is trying to create within them such thoughts, such ambitions, such dreams which would never be realized, and yet those dreams and ambitions, false dreams, would lead them astray to draw away from God Almighty's message. And the Almighty says that whether it is Jews or whether it is Christians or whether it is Muslims, if they are entertaining within their minds ideas and ambitions which are false, it's their own fault. And these ambitions, these wishful thinkings, whether it be from the people of the book or whether it be from the Muslims, are never going to be realized and never going to succeed. It's only the one who performs well that he or she is going to be rewarded in the hereafter. Whoever does an evil, whoever does things which are wrong, which are in the category of sin, the Almighty is going to take such people to task and is going to punish them, no matter whatever religion, whatever religious group they belong to. So that after having done that, in verses 135 to 152, the Muslims have been informed of the responsibilities that they owe to God Almighty while they have been given the Sharia, the law of God, which is a trust that they have to take as the ultimate responsibility for him. And there is no possibility, no reason why they should be lax in following it and in implementing it. The Almighty says that they have to be fair and just under all circumstances, no matter whether in doing so they are working against their own interests or the interests of their parents or their relatives. They have to be fair and just in ensuring and implementing the Sharia. And for them, the only consideration while taking decisions is the consideration of merit, because the Almighty is informing the Muslims very soon they will be given the responsibility to rule over other men. And this responsibility is a trial, and they can only succeed in this trial if they are fair and if their decisions and their judgments are based on merit. So that this is something which has been clarified, and the attitude, the dithering attitude of the hypocrites is condemned, who were not sure as to which way they were expected to go. They were at times inclined towards the Muslims, and at times they were inclined towards the disbelievers, because they were never sure as to which of the two groups they would ultimately like to side with and be loyal to. In verses 153 to 162, God Almighty has very strongly condemned the people of the book, the people who were entrusted with the responsibility of announcing the arrival of the Prophet, may Allah's mercy be on him, of introducing him to the rest of the world. And yet, they did exactly the opposite of it. They were the first people who denied him, who rejected him. And this was because they were jealous of it, jealous of the fact that somebody other than from amongst the children of Israel was given the privilege, the most significant privilege, of receiving the message of God and his law and Sharia. So that the Almighty is criticizing and condemning the people of the book, Jews as well as Christians. And he mentions a number of their conspiracies that took place in the past against God's law, despite the fact that they had the privilege of a number of prophets guiding them right in their lives, you know, physically, and in front of them they were dealing with them. And yet, as a nation, they in their history from time to time turned out to be people who were disloyal and unreliable. So that in the condemnation, all these vices have been mentioned, and mentioned in a tone which suggests that the Almighty is thoroughly disgusted with the behavior of these people, whether the behavior of disloyalty and of refraining from implementing God's will took place in the past, or whether the behavior was being repeated during the time of the revelation of the Quran, at the time when Prophet Muhammad, may Allah's mercy be on him, was there. Towards the ending part of the surah, the Quran talks about history of the messengers in brief. This mention of the history is primarily meant to clarify that Prophet Muhammad, may Allah's mercy be on him, is not a new prophet. He's not somebody who is unique. He's not come with something which is completely different from what was happening in the world before him. In fact, he is only a continuation of the process of messengers coming to this world. So that there was no reason absolutely for the Jews and the Christians to deny his prophethood. He had come to fulfill the promise that was contained in the Torah and in the Injil, in the Gospels, because God Almighty had always been sending from time to time his messengers, and the Almighty talks about briefly the list, the series of those messengers who all came with the same message that was brought by Prophet Muhammad, Allah's mercy be on him as well. And of course, this whole description is meant to clarify one point, that the Quran has come to stay as the book of God, and the Sharia and the law that has it contains, it carries, is going to be implemented in this world on the people on whom it was revealed. Even if there were some people who were drawn against it because of the jealousy that they had in their hearts, it's still going to succeed in getting implemented. Now, this is the message which essentially this surah is talking about towards the end. But finally, in the very final verse of the surah, we have a clarification given about a point that was mentioned in the 12th verse of the surah. In the 12th verse, the Almighty talks about the law of inheritance. And in that law, he talks about the fact that if somebody dies and leaves behind no children, he is issueless, then an indication is given that if he has siblings, brothers and sisters, then the brothers and sisters would take the position of the children, of the sons and daughters. But the mention of it was done in a way that although it was quite clear to every intelligent reader, it was not absolutely clear, written in black and white, so that there were some confusions, some questions raised with regard to this particular aspect of the law. So that the Almighty, going by his promise that he has mentioned in one of the surahs, Surah Al-Qiyamah, that when he would reveal the Quran, he would not only reveal the Sharia, he would also reveal some of the clarifications about the points that would be raised or would bother the minds of some people with regard to that law. So that the last verse of Surah An-Nisa, in actual fact, is talking about the clarification of a law which God Almighty had revealed earlier on. This is exactly what is known as fiqh. That is, there is a law which is there, mentioned clearly, but some aspects of the law become sometimes unclear to some people, and therefore you need to have some clarification presented by the knowledgeable people. At times it is God Almighty who himself presents those clarifications. Of course, God's clarifications are always binding. They are always correct. There can be no doubt about their authenticity. However, on some other occasions, it was Prophet Muhammad, may Allah's mercy be on him, who clarified some of the points that were mentioned in the Quran and yet were not clear to everybody. And this is indeed a process which was undertaken by the Muslim scholars as well, who, when they felt that there were certain aspects of the Islamic Sharia which needed further clarification, they came up with their own understanding of those clarifications. Most certainly, the clarification given by God Almighty is binding for all times to come. Most certainly, if a clarification is proved beyond doubt to have originated from Prophet Muhammad, may Allah's mercy be on him, then that too is binding on the Muslims for all times to come. However, the clarifications given by the scholars have to be taken on the basis of the merit of their arguments, because a human, howsoever knowledgeable he may be, is after all an ordinary human who is not directly guided by the Almighty. Surah Nisa, what I have mentioned as yet is comprised of 176 verses. If you look at it, the contents of the surah, it is divided into two components. The first segment is verses 1 to 43, which talk about essentially the law and the Sharia that the Almighty gave to the Ummah, and especially that aspect of the law which had to do with the rights of the weak, of the people who could be exploited, like the orphans, like the women, like the people whose wealth could be unjustifiably usurped by others. The second half of the surah, well, it's not a half, it's much longer than the first half, which is from verses 44 to 176, is talking about those people, essentially, who were drawn against Islamic message and the Sharia, the hypocrites, the people of the book, the Jews especially, and their conspiracies. And the Almighty is talking to the Muslims as to how to deal with such people and how to make sure that they, on the one hand, implement the Sharia in the best possible manner and yet be able to face up against the challenges that were thrown to them by those people who were not particularly pleased by the fact that God Almighty had conferred upon the Muslims the Sharia and the Islamic law. In a nutshell, as I mentioned earlier, Surah Nisa is the surah which gives to the Muslims the law and the Sharia, and also gives them guidance as to how to defend and protect that Sharia. May God Almighty enable us to understand His book as best as could be possible, and may He enable us to follow it to the best of our abilities.